Chapter 27 of the Autobiography of Lord Alfred Douglas. This Legamus recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Chapter 27. Directly after my father's death, the South African War broke out. By the time war was declared, I had already bought two or three horses, and they were being trained by George Woodhouse at Chantilly. As soon as I heard the news, I returned to London and offered myself as a trooper in Paget's horse. Colonel Paget said to me, "You would much better join the Duke of Cambridge's corps, which is being recruited entirely from gentlemen who are prepared to pay for all their own equipment." I accordingly went straight to the depot of the corps, joined it, after passing the riding, shooting and medical tests, and gave the secretary a cheque for £250 to pay for my horse and equipment. 2 days afterwards, my cheque for £250 was returned to me, with a letter informing me that my services were not required. In face of this deliberate and cowardly insult, there was nothing to do but what I did, namely, to write to Lord Arthur Hill, who was responsible for raising the corps, and to tell him in plain English what I thought of him and also of the Duke of Cambridge. Having thus relieved my feelings, I returned to Chantilly and bought another horse. I bought a horse called Hardy out of a selling race for £250. He belonged to Edmund Blanc, the owner of the casino at Monte Carlo, and had been leading his horses in their work at Chantilly. He was 6 years old and had never won a race, and he was a gelding, a beautiful chestnut horse. I put him in a race at Lille, and he ran there and won during the time I was with Frank Harris at Monte Carlo. I had an extraordinary run of luck on that occasion at Monte Carlo. In the intervals of talking business and lunching and dining with Harris, I went into the casino with 25 louis. That was then, of course, £20. I determined that I would not lose more than this, and that the moment I lost it, I would come out of the rooms and not go back. This was the third time I had been at Monte Carlo. I went once with Oscar, just before he prosecuted my father at the Old Bailey. We stayed at the Hôtel de Paris, and I won about £70 or £80. Then I went nearly 2 years later with my mother to the Hôtel Windsor. This was the occasion when, as I have described, I was at first refused admission to the rooms on the ground that I was too young, although really I was 27. This was also the occasion on which I met again and dined with the colonial who had had the historic argument with Harry de Wint at the Grand Hotel in Rome. On the third occasion, when I was with Harris, who, although at one time he had, so he says, been a big gambler, now never went into the rooms, I determined that, as I had just bought horses and was also going in for Harris's gold mine, it really would be foolish to start chucking away money at the casino. However, I could not resist the idea of giving 25 louis a chance, so, after registering all sorts of mental vows that I would not lose more than this sum, I went in and put a louis on the number 13, which promptly came up. I doubled my stake, and it came up again. In those days, play at the casino was in real gold and notes. When you won with an en plein louis, you were paid with a 500-franc note and 10 louis in gold. I went on backing en plein at haphazard, 5 or 6 at a time. Every time I won one, I put the note in my pocket and went on with the gold. After about 2 hours, I lost my last gold piece and went out with 9 or 10 500-franc notes in my pocket, about £200. I gave this money to Cesare and told him to put it in a big envelope, together with any other notes I might win. I told him he was on no account to give me the envelope till I was actually getting into the train to go away. After dinner that evening, I again went in with 25 louis. I went on backing 5 or 6 en plein each coup, and doubling my stake when I won. But I never had more than 2 louis on a number. I repeated my plan of pocketing the notes and going on with the gold as long as I had any left. The result was just about the same as that of my morning séance. To cut a long story short, I went on doing this every day while I remained at Monte Carlo. I was there only 4 days, and I went into the rooms 3 times a day. I never lost my 25 louis till the last day, when I went in, at what hour I forget, but I know that my train was due to start about an hour later, and that I had instructed Cesare, who looked after me during all the time of my stay with special attention, that he was to be at the station with my luggage, and that I would be there to catch the train. For the first time I lost the 25 louis. I rushed out to the bank and changed a cheque for £50. I went back and lost it all. The gambling fever was on me, and I went out to cash another cheque, but on the way to Smith's Bank I looked at my watch, and saw that I had just 5 minutes to catch my train. I hesitated for a moment, and then dashed to the station. When I got there I found the train in, and Cesare, with my luggage, looking wildly round for me. I just had time to get in, my bags were hurled after me, and the train began to move. Cesare handed me the sealed envelope containing my winnings, and I sank back on the seat. I'd lost count of what I'd won, and I eagerly opened the envelope. It contained 42,000 francs, £1,680. So I actually got away with over £1,600, allowing for the 70 I had dropped that day. If I had been what is called a really good gambler, and had played up my luck as such a gambler would have done, I could easily have won 20,000 or 30,000 pounds with the luck I had. But being a really good gambler cuts both ways, and I never was one. When I got to Nice, I was within an ace of getting out and going back to Monte Carlo for another flutter in the casino, but I resisted the temptation and went on. I stopped the night at Marseille, in those days there was no blue train, and found a telegram from Woodhouse, my trainer, to say that my horse had won at Lille. This was the first race I won. It was worth only 3,000 francs, £120, as far as I remember, but I was perfectly delighted. I had entrusted Woodhouse with 50 louis to back the horse for me. In the provinces in those days, in France, if you had 50 louis on your horse, he was pretty sure to start favourite, and I think I got only about 6-4 for my money. 2 or 3 months later, my horse Hardy ran in the selling race, 1.25 miles, which was the opening race on the card on the day of the French Derby at Chantilly. There was a good enough market there, as at all the meetings round Paris. There were plenty of bookmakers in those days, now done away with, as well as the Paris Mutuel. I fancied my horse, and told all my friends to back him. Just because I was a novice, and also looked like a schoolboy, though in reality I was in my 30th year, nobody seemed to believe that I could win a race, and I doubt if any of my friends benefited by this, which was really something of a coup. 2 other horses in the race were backed for money, and my horse started at 6-1. I had 300 louis on him, and he made all the running and won in a canter by 2 lengths. My horse was a gelding, and there were in those days in France very few races for which geldings were qualified. On the Friday after the race I have referred to, there was a 5-furlong race at Maison Lafitte for chevaux entiers, Hongres et Jumeaux. I had insisted on entering Hardy for this race, against the advice of my trainer, who said the horse had no chance over any distance less than 1 mile, 1,600 metres. However, my chief object was to see my colours, and I also had an odd feeling that the horse would win. Woodhouse was, I think, really rather annoyed that I would insist on starting the horse. There were about 18 runners, and my horse was quoted at 50-1. I had 50 louis each way on him. I was watching the race with my glasses, and halfway from home saw my horse in the ruck, and apparently having no chance, but in the last 200 yards he came with a rush, went right through the beaten horses, got up on the post, and made a dead heat. I forget the name of the other dead heater, but we divided the stakes, and my bet brought me in over 1,600 louis. Dear old Hardy, whom I used to ride myself before breakfast at exercise, wound up the season in France by winning a £500 handicap at Maison Lafitte by a short head, beating some of the best handicap horses in France and starting at 50-1 in the book. he brought in 689 francs for 10 in the Paris Mutuel, roughly 68-1, and 330-odd for a place, 32-1. As luck would have it, he won this race on the only occasion in France since his victory at Lille when I was not present to see him run. If I had been on the course, I would certainly have had at least 25 louis each way on him, as in those days I always had a bet on any horse I ran, even when, as in the present case, I did not think he had a chance. He was running apparently right out of his class, but the fact is that at this moment he was a really good horse, and I would not have taken £1,000 for him. If he had not broken down a little later, he would have been worth a fortune over jumps, as he was a perfect natural jumper. It happened that on the day the race was run, it was pouring rain. I did not get up to go out riding at exercise, and I was still in bed in my villa at Chantilly when Woodhouse came in about 10 o'clock in the morning and said, "Are you going racing today, my lord?" I said, "No, I shall give it a miss. This rain will make the ground very heavy, and that will settle any possible chance our horse could have in this sort of company. Besides, I've arranged to take a friend out to lunch in Paris, and I would not be able to get away in time. I shall not back the horse," I added. Then, just as Woodhouse was going out, I called him back and gave him 200 francs and said, "Put me 100 francs, £4, each way on him in the Paris Mutuel." I went up to Paris, where I had an appointment to meet a young French girl, whom I had met at Trouville. Deauville, apart from the racecourse, scarcely existed in those days, and Trouville was the place, and with whom I was at that time slightly épris. I took my young lady to lunch, and for a drive in the Bois afterwards. I parted from her on the boulevard, and towards 6 o'clock drifted to a chair on the pavement outside an American bar near the Gare du Nord to await a train back to Chantilly. A boy selling the Paris Sport, evening sporting paper, passed. He grinned ingratiatingly at me and said, "Achetez-moi un journal, mon beau petit prince." I gave him a couple of francs in return for his compliment, took a paper, saw that my horse had won by a short head, and was divided between pleasure at the gallant performance of the old horse and disgust that I had not backed him. It is true that with the value of the stakes and my tiny bet, I had won about £900, but the thought that if I had been on the course I would have won at least four times as much was maddening, especially as things had not been going very brilliantly from the racing point of view at that time. This was Hardy's last race. He had previously distinguished himself by running second, beaten a short head entirely owing to the jockey hitting him with his whip when he had been warned that if he touched the horse with a whip he would stop. And in the Ouse Handicap at Baden-Baden, a race worth nearly £1,000. When this happened, I was not present, having gone instead to Deauville, where I had 500 louis on Fourier for the Deauville Cup at 5-1. The horse, who won in a canter by 2 lengths, being disqualified, and the race awarded to Codeman. This action of the stewards, which I have never been able to understand, and which made a difference to me of 3,000 louis on the wrong side, caused a riot, and the mob from the Pelouse booing and howling for 3/4 of an hour, and being prevented only by a large force of police from rushing the stands and the judges' box. My racing career received a setback from which it never quite recovered with this misfortune, which followed on a run of bad luck of all kinds. I had 1 or 2 other winners, notably a good horse, a jumper, called Guara, who won a race at Auteuil and another at Enghien. I kept the horses on for some time after Hardy's win at Maison Lafitte, but did no more good with them. Poor Hardy in the end bolted at exercise, chucked off the boy who was riding him, and ran away for about 5 miles down the La Morlaix road at Chantilly. This was the result of a hard frost, which stopped all work for more than a week, and the horses were all doing walking exercise and jumping out of their skins. The road was like iron, and when Hardy was caught he was broken down badly all round. He had already been fired before I bought him, and he never got sound enough to race again, and in the end, with great grief, I had him shot when I sold the other horses, because I knew that as a gelding he would inevitably end up in a cab if I sold him. It was a pity, as if I had known anyone who would have given him a good home, I would have gladly handed him over for nothing. He might still have been hacked about, or even hunted, though of course he was rather a handful to ride for anyone who was not used to riding thoroughbred racehorses. I've had English friends come out at exercise at Chantilly who were by way of being first-class men to hounds, and when they rode in a gallop, the horses nearly always got away with them. There is all the difference in the world between riding a well-schooled hunter and a thoroughbred horse in full training, even for a good horseman. My idea is that no one who has not had some experience of riding thoroughbred horses in gallops really knows how to ride. If you can ride a hard-pulling horse in a string and keep him in his place, you can ride anything. However, as Bacon remarks, these be toys. End of chapter 27.